Welcome back to another episode of Plugged Into. I'm your host, Kimmy Dixon, and I'm also the founder of Hypertribe, of which this is a production of. So this week we'll be talking to Dope St. Jude all about publishing and syncs. Plugged Into is all about being able to understand the music industry and the complexities that come with that, whilst building the artist entrepreneur. But before we get into that, if you like what you hear, please do let us know and head over to our website, www.hypertribe.io, to find out more about how we're supporting artists. Also follow us on Insta and Twitter at hyper_tribe. We'd love to hear from you. And as ever, please do get in touch, engage with us and let us know what you think. Welcome, Dope St. Jude. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey to where you are today?
Hi, my name is Dope St. Jude, and I am from Cape Town, South Africa. And I started making music about 5 years ago. I actually started out as a drag king. I didn't initially start out with the intention of being in the music industry. I was just looking for a way to perform because I felt that that was something that brought me joy. So I started as a drag king, which is kind of the opposite of a drag queen. So I would dress up as a boy and perform at queer clubs and so on. And from there, my drag character was based on Lil Wayne. So I started writing my own lyrics, and then I found that drag was a bit one-dimensional, but I had kind of garnered a small following in Cape Town. And then from there, I decided to teach myself music production. And then I decided I was going to create a persona called Dope St. Jude and make music. And from there, I created a few music videos and then got a booking agent and eventually moved to London to pursue it full time.
That's awesome. And in your career so far, you've kind of taken a route that, you know, is definitely exceptionally creative, kind of a more organic path. At the moment, you've got a lot of kind of features and things like that with Apple TV, BET. What was the process for you to kind of reach those kind of core things? Because one thing that I can say that comes out of the mouth of a lot of artists, how do I get a sync? How do I talk about licensing? How did that come about?
Well, I first moved to London, and when I came to London, I produced a track with a producer named Pete Boxter Martin, and we just worked on the track kind of as an experiment, and that track was Girl Like. I have my management based in Paris, and I think it's all about kind of creating the right team around you. And how I built the team around me was by honestly sending a lot of emails to people. Initially, when I was in Cape Town, quite a small artist, people found my work on the internet, and I got flown to France to perform at a show. And the people who curated the festival, after the festival, I kept emailing them and asking them to put me in touch with a potential manager or booking agent. And after 6 months, they got back to me with someone. And that someone is my now manager, Munir. And so he put me in touch with a really cool publisher. And that publisher kind of facilitated all the syncs and a lot of the production that happened, and also helped me move to London. And that's kind of how I got into the sync game, through the publisher. So it's all about kind of creating the team around you, like starting with a good manager. And then if you're an independent artist, if you're on a label, your label will do your publishing for you. But I found an independent publisher. And then obviously the publisher has a network and submits the music for syncs to their different partners around the world. And that's kind of how I ended up getting so many syncs. It's just kind of, you know, I just built the right team around me.
And that kind of persistence as well, it's not easy, is it? I mean, like,
yes, definitely. Like, I guess, like, if you asked me 5 years ago if I would think that my life now would be possible, I would probably say no. I mean, obviously it would have been a wild dream for me to come and live in London and be able to like live sustainably as an African artist, because you can imagine the currency is very different in Africa versus living in the UK. So I didn't ever imagine that it would happen so quickly that I would be able to like live in London and sustain myself and do music full time. But I think it was like a matter of being really persistent and tenacious, you know. People always tell me that I am pretty tenacious and I don't let things get me down very easily.
It sounds like there was a massive mentality change. Like if you're saying that 5 years ago you weren't really like that, was there a tipping point? Was there something that you were like, you know what, I just can't, I don't know, like there was a breaking point that you were just like, let's do this?
Honestly, it was like fear of regret. Like I am lucky enough to be someone who likes to read, and I've read a lot of books. I read a lot of self-help books and then like memoirs, like things that haven't actually got to do with music at all. But like what I took away from learning from other people's stories is that I don't want to live a life filled with regret, and I'd rather pursue something and fail at it than not pursue it at all. And so that's what prompted me kind of like sending those emails every single day for 6 months and not getting a response, and then eventually getting a response. And that's what prompted moving to London with very little money. I think I had the equivalent of £2,500 when I got to London, which isn't very much to come here with the intention of staying for a few months. But I saved and I just kind of went, and I had no backup plan. And sometimes I think not having a backup plan is also, it kind of propels you to work even harder because it's kind of an all or nothing situation. So that's the way I pursued it. I just kind of threw myself into it and didn't have any second options and didn't want to feel any kind of sense of regret that I didn't try.
I love that. I love that. I think that's such a good attitude, and it's something that I was also told at one time. And I think it's so true. It's so much better to have just done and tried and failed, or done and put it out there and just be okay with it, than to let it kind of go to waste. And I think that, you know, there was probably a lot of stuff that probably wouldn't have happened if there was that point in your life.
Yes.
But coming back to like, there's a hustle, there's definitely a, you know, an all or nothing, taking away the safety net and so on. It's definitely an awesome attitude. So the publishing side of things, let's get back to that, because I think that there's a really mystical kind of, I don't know, I feel almost as if artists, sometimes they can underestimate that, you know, signing up to a publisher, you immediately get a sync. It's like, you know, where's my sync? Where's my, you know, and the reason why I feel that a lot of artists really want to have a sync is because it's a good way for publicity and also for financial benefits as well. But what was that process really like to find a publisher? Was it through your manager, or was it something that you had to do independently?
Yes, it was through my manager. But I think what stood out about my publisher for me was that I felt a kind of sense of trust with my publisher, because I had propositions and I continued to get propositions from a lot of different companies who want to take over my publishing. But what's really important for me is integrity and kind of feeling like I can trust the person I work with and that they are honest. So that's kind of like how I chose the publisher I ended up with. I chose someone who I felt was honest and someone who I felt like we shared similar values. Like that's just personally something that's important to me. I would choose that over like someone who has a really insane track record, but I don't agree with their value system or with the way they do business. So that's how I found my manager too. Like when we sat down, we really kind of vibed and I felt like we were on the same page. Yeah, so I found the publisher through my manager and we got along really well. And I signed over my tracks, the first five tracks of my EP that I had produced in London. I signed it over to my publisher, keeping ownership of the master. So that was also important, was that I didn't want a publisher or any kind of team that wouldn't allow me to own my music. You know, it's so easy for artists to get duped, or for artists to like give away 50% of their master to like random stakeholders. I was really excited that my publisher insisted that I keep my master. Yeah, so that's, it was just, it sounded like a good deal, and it sounded like a kind of a too good to be true situation, but I knew that it was the right fit for me because the guy was honest and, you know, like he was just a good guy, man.
But that's such an important point. Can you explain a little bit about why it's so important to keep him? Well, first of all, what is a master? And then also the importance of keeping that master.
So when a song gets sold, it gets divided into two sides of payment. So for example, if a song gets sold for £10,000, just to pick a round number, if a song gets used for an advert, say Apple or Adidas uses your song and if they're willing to pay £10,000, £5,000 of that money goes towards the master and the other £5,000 goes to publishing. So if you own the master, that means 100% of that 5,000 goes to you. So you get that full amount. So master means you own the final rights to your track. Then you also have publishing rights, which is the other 5,000. And depending on the deal you cut with your publisher, you get whichever percentage you have a right to. So if you have a 50-50 deal with your publisher will get 50% of the other 5,000, and then you'll get 50% of the other 5,000. So you get your master fee and you get your publishing fee. It's really important for artists to really wrap their heads around that. I think it can be quite intimidating. I know for me it was intimidating to really grasp what publishing and licensing and all of that meant. But I did my research and I read until it was drummed into my head, because we should always be very cautious and on top of it. Like, we need to be on top of things when it comes to our money. I say this especially for women artists. Like, we have to be on top of things when it comes to, like understanding how money works and how much you're entitled to and so on.
Two questions. First of all, where did you find that information? Where were you reading and all those kind of things? If you were going to talk to someone that was like, okay, I'm right at the beginning of all of this, I don't understand publishing, I don't understand licensing and everything, where would you immediately say, where would be your go-to?
To be honest, I don't know it off the top of my head, but what I did was I Googled a lot of kind of music business websites. And if you look carefully online, there are a lot of resources and websites that give you access to information like that. And they often like in PDF files that you can download, but you really got to sift through the information because it is kind of complicated. But also I'd had the discussion with my manager, who also explained it to me. And then also with my distributor, because I'm signed to a distributor in London. So what they do, they are the company that put my music on Spotify and on Apple. And I was able to like through them understand what licensing and publishing was. But I would tell everyone, just do your own research, like go online and sift through a lot of different sources, because you don't want to just have access to one source that tells you one angle of the story. When you read a lot, you're able to like get the general idea, because obviously publishing works, I imagine it works differently for every different company. Like everyone has their own deal for publishing. So you want to do a lot of research so you can find what would fit for you.
Definitely. Definitely. And just explaining a little bit about the publisher, first of all, what would be a fee that would be, you know, if you heard that fee for a publisher, I mean, a percentage of those publishing, of that publishing fee that you would just think was extortionate. Like if you said to me, there was a manager out there that was taking 50% of an, or like, you know, 60% of an artist's like income, I'd just immediately just say, that's ridiculous, you know.
Well, I would say like it also depends on who produced the track, because that's another factor that comes into it, because you have to often share your publishing with your producers. So if you are someone who's self-produced, then I would say then probably with the publisher, you want to obviously give your publisher incentive to push your music. So you don't want to give them a small percentage that it doesn't benefit them at the end of the day to push your music. So I would say like from 25%, maybe even 50% of the publishing, not of the master. Always keep your master. But when it comes to publishing, that's another fee. I would say give them an amount of like 25% and 50% if you're generous. Because also you have to bear in mind that the publishing fee could be split between you, your publisher, and then if you have a producer, like they need to get a cut and your producer's publisher. So yeah, it can get quite complicated. So it helps to understand maths and understand percentages when it comes to that. But yeah, 25% to maybe 50% of the publishing rights, yes.
That's awesome. And so just going back to the songwriting and just generally like music when it comes to licensing and so on, do you ever write for a particular brief?
No, I've never actually ever written for a particular brief. In fact, I kind of struggle with that. I am very much like a creative, an old-fashioned creative. Like I like to create whatever I'm feeling in that moment. So I don't ever write for a brief. I write what I'm feeling. And the thing about syncs is that honestly, it can be the luck of the draw. Like some songs just work really well for sync and some songs don't. So you can't always expect that every song will get a play or get a sync, like a major sync, because some songs just don't work. They might sound too generic. And then it's like a gamble, or you kind of strike gold when you have a song that gets picked up, because it just needs to be the right feel for that particular brand and what they're trying to convey at that moment. Like, I don't think it's really possible to write for sync.
Was there anything in particular that you would advise yourself about 5 years ago?
I would advise myself to take my job or treat my music as a job as early as I could. But I would advise myself to do that even earlier, like treat it as you would a 9-to-5, like spend time like creating, but then also spend time in your day focusing on the business side of things, developing your brand, networking, making good relationships. I wish I had done that earlier and not treated it in the beginning like a kind of passion project and something I was like precious about, you know? Like sometimes you just need to buckle down and treat it like a job, because it's not you're not going to feel inspired every day. It's not going to be magical every day to create music. Yeah. Sometimes it's just work, and you can't always wait for inspiration and joy to create. Sometimes you just have to push yourself to create every single day and to treat this like a job. Because at the end of the day, it is a job. If you're expecting to get an income from it, you've got to put in the hours.
I completely agree with that. So what's coming up for you in the future? What's the next thing? What can we expect?
Well, I haven't released an album before, so I'm really excited to release my debut album. And I'm taking this time during the COVID-19 lockdown, because obviously I can't travel. I had a whole lot of shows booked for the summer and they're all cancelled now. So I'm using this time to focus on my creativity and kind of laying the foundation for my debut album. And then also just in general, like working on developing my brand on social media, because I was traveling so much last year. I toured a lot last year. I didn't spend enough time really thinking about how to develop my social media brand. I guess it wasn't easy for me. Some people do it like very easy. They post TikTok videos all the time. And I think I need to like get on top of that. So that's what I'm going to be spending my time doing, just engaging with my audience in a more meaningful way.
And speaking of social media, where can everyone find you?
They can find me on all the platforms. I am on Instagram, on Facebook, on TikTok, on Twitter, YouTube, on all the platforms. And my name is Dope Saint Jude, D-O-P-E, Saint, S-A-I-N-T, Jude, J-U-D-E.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I think that so many people are going to learn from you, and your brand already is awesome, and you're doing some super cool stuff. You're also one of our mentors on our Pioneer program, so you're completely trailblazing a path for women in music, that's for sure. So thank you.
Thank you very much for having me. It's really great to share this kind of knowledge.
Thanks for tuning in and listening to another episode of Plugged Into. I've been your host, Kimmy Dixon, and I'm also the founder of Hypertribe, of which this is a production of. If you enjoy our podcast, do get in touch with us online and visit our website, www.hypertribe.io, as we have a big announcement happening. Our Instagram is hyper_tribe. Give us a follow on there and engage with us and tell us exactly what you want to hear and who you'd like to hear from. Until next time, and a massive thanks to Dope St. Jude for this episode. Take care and stay safe.